Hey everybody, it's Jimmy Smith. It's a jam-packed lineup today on the MMA on SiriusXM podcast. I talked to PFL and former WWE announcer Lillian Garcia about the PFL championships coming up on November 25th. Also, I speak to rising star and UFC strawweight Vanessa Demopoulos about her future after her win at UFC Vegas 65. And finally, I speak to American Kickboxing Academy head coach Javier Mendez to discuss AKA's recent run of success with Islam Makhachev and Usman Nurmagomedov. Lillian Garcia, PFL announcer, you must have been thrilled when they're like, yeah, November 25th, that's when our fight is like, yeah, nothing going on that Thursday. Sure, why not? I'll do my fight interviews. I'll do all my prep. I'll watch all the video packages the night before when I'm supposed to be at Thanksgiving with my family. But you're okay, right? How's that working out?
I'm doing just fine. Actually, I was kind of excited. You know, I actually lost my parents, just my dad a few years ago, my mom last year. I've got my sister in Nashville. I'm going to go spend Christmas with her. But it felt good because I used to live in New York for 16 years. So it actually feels good to be here. I'm kind of feeling like I'm at home. And the PFL literally has become a family to me that I love spending time with them. So it feels good to actually be here this week for sure.
Awesome. So when I look at this fight card, as I said, PFL really loaded the clip. This is full of outstanding fights, full of outstanding fighters. When you look at it objectively, if you look at it from the outside, what leaps off the page to you in terms of can't miss matchups?
Oh my God, how many? Like, seriously. Yeah. I mean, they all have a story. That's what's so great. I mean, we've got fighters that are undefeated. For example, you've got Wilkinson and Omari Akhmadov. They're both undefeated. Yeah. They're going to be facing each other. So it's interesting to see. When I say undefeated, I mean this season, right? Right. It's going to be interesting to see how they do going head to head. Of course, it's going to be interesting to see Kayla Harrison undefeated. But now she's truly undefeated, 15-0. But you've got Larissa Pacheco that has shaken things up. I mean, from when I announced her, what was it, 2 years ago, maybe three, because I can't remember. We lost a year with the pandemic. I think it was 2019 when she went against Kayla. And when I announced her, to see the growth that she has done as a fighter, and she's got five first round knockouts this season. I mean, who knows what's going to happen between those two? You've got, you know, Brendan Lochnane against Bubba Chinkins. I mean, both of them are just awesome. But you know they're going for $1 million. So even though they like each other, that's where you see the sport come in. And that's been so much fun for me, Jimmy. It's just to see from wrestling to MMA and getting to see such a different take on MMA from cage side. I've just grown such a respect for all these fighters that I wish them all the best.
When I spoke to Bubba Jenkins, we interviewed him a few weeks back, and I've known Bubba for a long time. I called his fights in Bellator. I watched him in the NCAAs. I've been watching him forever, but I've known him for a long time. He was almost like, we said at the end of the interview, we go to commercial, and KLB goes, that's the happiest he has ever been anytime we've talked to him. It's like, it's just this idea of, Bubba was one of those guys where it was like, not every promotion got behind him in a sense. And he's like, the cool thing about PFL is the season, I'm going to win. I'm going to be there at the end. I feel like my destiny's in my own hands in a way it hasn't been since I was in, you know, the NCAAs when it was like, all right, I got to win five times and I'm a champion. And that's it. That idea of, as you said, there's $1 million at the end, but the way there is not how well my promo sells. It's not a WWE type thing. I got to win. And that freedom for fighters like Bubba Jenkins, who have been overlooked their entire career, that means a lot. Have you run across that a lot in PFL?
Oh, I think every fighter feels that way. You know, it's in their destiny. It's in their hands. Their destiny is in their hands. And that's what's been so great is that they can really just set the course. They know when they're going to fight. For them, that's been big. They can really strategize as to even for, you know, cutting weight, how to strategize that with the fights. They know the dates. And so it's up to them. And that's what's so intense and so awesome. And I just have so much respect for them and what they're doing. But I think Bubba, I can see him the first season, he was a little bit like checking it out, you know? Yeah. Now he's like, okay, I know what's going on here. Brendan Lochnane, same thing, because they've both been here already. You know, it's almost like when football players go to the Super Bowl for the very first time, they're a little bit like, I don't know what to expect, the media, all of that. And then when they go again, they're a little looser. And I think that's what's going to make the fight even better.
When you look at it from that kind of perspective, I had Anthony Pettis on my show. I had Stevie Ray on my show. Pettis talked about how difficult the schedule was. He's like, yeah, I wasn't ready for three fights in 3 months. I wasn't ready for, I got to cut weight three times. And does it favor maybe the younger fighter? Does it maybe favor the fighter who isn't cutting as much weight? What do you think is the sauce that makes a schedule of three fights in 3 months work for some and not work for others? What do you think part of it might be?
I think that maybe with some of the fighters that have been here a few seasons, they're kind of getting into that groove. With some of the other fighters that have been at other promotions that don't have to fight, you know, three or four fights in a season, that's something so new to them. It's almost like learning something like all over again. And I think that's what I hear from the fighters. That's what they're telling me, is that they've been able to literally look at the schedule and then backtrack and go, okay, I need to do this during the off season and do this on and this month. And they really get like a routine and a flow going. And some of the other fighters are having a little tougher time with that because it's something new for them.
Speaking, of course, to Lillian Garcia, PFL announcer, another story that kind of comes out of this pay-per-view. Delano Taylor, a huge upset, knocking out Rory McDonald. When you talk about wide-eyed, like, oh, I did it. Like, yeah, you did. But now you're in the finals, and now it's for a title. You don't get, you know, as you just said about the schedule, you also don't get a lot of time to digest or stay in that last win, right? Because, hey, it's almost like the playoffs in football. Hey, that was great. Next week is another playoff game. Delano Taylor, does he have to get over that wide-eyed, happy to be here, oh, my God, I did it, and refocus? What do you think is key for him?
You know, in a sense, though, I feel like that's actually good to have because it keeps you excited, right? And when you can play off that excitement. But again, that's somebody who's 25 years old. I mean, this guy went from
babies, right? Babies.
And also, you got Sada Bousi, who's been there four times now. This will be four times. And you know, his heart, his soul, his everything, he's like, I am not going to blow this. I'm going to do it. He's veteran. So we've got the veteran going against the newcomer. And we'll see as far as, I think a lot of it, like, again, I really love interviewing fighters and getting in their heads. And they tell me, you know, yes, we do these things with our body and to prepare, but mentally. And that's the big game, is the mental game. And so I haven't seen what Delano's like this week. It's going to be interesting to see him in the press conference tomorrow, how he does and how he's feeling and go from there.
Now, Stevie Ray is the guy, once again, I've spoken to him. I've been on the show twice. He defeated Anthony Pettis. And he said, I twisted the guy the first time. I submitted him. He gave up. I didn't. And in the rematch, it's almost like, everybody was talking about Pettis. Everybody was talking about him and not me, and I had to, like, earn it all over again. Once again, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, a free agent from the UFC, and he feels like, dude, I'm in the same spot where everybody's talking about Aubin-Mercier and not me. That kind of disrespect that, you know, it was a similar thing when I was in Bellator. The quote-unquote Bellator guys who were defending their turf went, hey, man, I've been here for 5 years. I've been kicking ass for a long time. And this guy coming over, think he's going to beat me? And a lot of times the free agent got the piss beaten out of him, you know? And do you think it's that idea of certain guys who have been around for a while, like Stevie Ray, are defending their turf and they feel kind of slighted? Is that a common thing to you?
Sure, that could feel. I mean, I'm sure that that's the way that they could feel. And I always say to that, or my thoughts are always like, go out and prove it. Just prove it. Just earn it. And you know what I mean? Like, he wants to make a statement. There's no bigger statement than earning that $1 million, earning that world title and doing it over and over and making weight and all of these consistency things. That's the thing, is just keep being consistently great and you will earn that. And don't put so much stress as to what other people think. Just do your job, right? Just go in there and do it and let everything else fall into place. But you know something I got to say about Olivier? It was so cool. I had him on my show. I was doing Prep Point a few years ago during the pandemic, trying to let people know some of the newer fighters and all. And Olivia was brand new. And when he was being interviewed by me, I asked, he mentioned it, how cool, and his dream was to be on the posters. He wanted to be on those championship posters. And so I'm thinking about him this year. I was like, you know what? He visualized it. He wanted it. And now he's on the poster. And it's just, it's so cool because something like that you can put in your mind and then have something to work for. And here it is.
When I had interviewed, of course, Kayla Harrison quite a few times on this show. But once again, I'm looking at her Zoom screen, right? I've talked to her a lot, but I never met her. Finally, there was a Bellator down here in South Florida. I went there to check it out, and she was cage-side, you know? And I remember I've met a lot of athletes in my life, a lot. And there are very few where I went, holy shit. Looking at him, I was like, holy crap. Cyborg was one of those. When you first meet Cyborg, you go, God, she is just huge and muscular and just an unbelievable physical specimen. When I met Kayla Harrison, I walked up to her. Hey, Kayla. She goes, hey, Jimmy. And I hugged her. I was like, I got that same feeling of like, oh, my God. She physically is just one of those athletes. Like, if you meet a lineman, you go, holy, how are you that big? Or if you meet, you know, I met Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I went, oh, my God. Like, I knew you were tall, but seeing it is a different thing. Kayla is that kind of athlete. And do you feel that that athleticism, that power is a problem for a lot of opponents? And the fact that Pacheco has faced her before might be a little bit of an edge. She's at least dealt with it before. What are your thoughts?
So I think it's exactly what I was saying before, the mental game as well, because when you meet Kayla, it's not just her size, but she's got the mental game. And so it's this aura. She's bigger than life, right? Then you meet her and she's just so massive. And so you know that she's tuned in physically, mentally, just so focused. And that's what really stands out. Every time I talk to her, she's just right there. It's going to be, I'm so glad it's the main event. I think it's going to be amazing. Pacheco's got something to prove, especially since last season she didn't make weight. It's one of those things that I was telling you that it was in her hands, you know, and it was up to her and she didn't make weight. She's probably coming in there with just anger at herself, right, for blowing it last year. And now she's like, I have something to prove. And those kinds of stories, when you put them in the cage, is what makes an amazing fight.
So speaking, of course, of Lillian Garcia, PFL announcer, you are also a WWE announcer. What I'm curious about, what I got asked all about, man, how does it feel different? Like, how does it feel calling a big WWE event and a big, you know, UFC event or a big Bellator event or a big this lead up to this pay-per-view, which is incredibly important for the PFL, how is it feeling to you having been around big events before? How big does it feel to you?
It feels huge, especially because it's pay-per-view, right? I mean, there's a lot on the line. We're trying to do the best we can to like really grow the company. And I love the fact that this company takes risks. And the fact that they put this on pay-per-view, you've just got to go and take a risk and do it. And it, for me, it makes it even bigger, right? Because WrestleManias are pay-per-views and people buy in like crazy. And so it's kind of like, it's behind this door and you've got to unlock, here's the key, but you've got to accept the key to unlock it. And I just think a lot of people are going to be very, very surprised and very excited that night with what these fights are going to prove. And for me, it's funny, Jimmy, every time I'm in that cage, I feel like I'm in an elimination chamber match. It feels massive. It feels very gladiator-like. And it's just so much fun to be able to step in there and call these fights.
You know, the difference to me, what's so interesting is to go from the WWE to PFL is almost the opposite of the – and here's what I'm saying is people ask me all the time, well, you know, athletes in WWE, performance in WWE, how are they different from performance in combat sports? Ultimately, all their stuff has to come together, meaning I have to have the right character. I got to have the right rivalry. I have to have the right push at the right time. So as great as they are as athletes and performers, they're not always in charge of their own destiny because it is they got to be in the right angle and the right story, and there's a bigger plan that they are not necessarily part of, right? It's part of how well they do is out of their hands. In PFL, it's literally all in your hands. Like, you have a great season, you don't. Good luck. Sorry. The guy who cut the great promo, the guy who's more famous, doesn't make it past the first round, and that's the way it is. That contrast, is there anything more like that than PFL and WWE, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people ask me, they're like, oh, you know, WWE, it's entertainment. I'm like, if you see how these guys get hurt, that's not.
Oh my God! Yes,
that's not entertaining. And when they're in their 50s and 60s and they're all hobbled over and they can't hardly walk, and I mean their bodies, 300 plus dates a year on the road, that's athleticism for sure. So yeah, you know, I think that the biggest for me that was such a shocker in getting to know what MMA was all about when I made the transition was like, wow, okay, so WWE, they focus on wrestling, yes, but they also have to focus on the entertainment and, like you said, the moves, the this, the that, the flow, the all of these things that they have. Plus, they're doing high-flying moves and chairs and ladders and tables and oh my, right? Yeah. There's a lot on that. And then this side, it's like one moment you're boxing, one moment you're wrestling, one moment you're judo and grappling. You're like, whoa, that is crazy to me that you have to know how to do all of it. And that was just so impressive. To see what these MMA fighters are all about. But yeah, I mean, it's, they live in the moment. They live in the moment.
Yeah.
In both respects, just different.
Yeah. And also, you know, and I took some heat for this about, you know, people ask me, oh, what's the difference in commentary between the WWE and combat sports? And I go, in the WWE, you're part of the theater. I was part of this as a commentator. I'm not really commentating, meaning I'm not reacting to what I'm seeing. I'm part of a story, and I know part of that story. And I'm very much when you're commentating a fight, I'm on the same side as the audience. I don't know what's going to happen any more than you do, and I know more than you because I've been in this forever. But I don't know any more than you do. I'm on the other side of the rope, right, in the WWE, right? I'm part of the theater, all right? You know, they're going to destroy your table. Make sure your phone's not on there. Stuff like that. Okay, got it. You know, stuff like that.
Really be careful. They're coming right to you.
Exactly, exactly. All right, they're going to come out of the audience with a chair and just be out of the way because you don't get it. Okay, got it. You know what I mean? I'm on the other side of the rope, right, yeah. In WWE and in combat sports. What's it like to you being on, once again, the other side of the rope and being part of the audience rather than being part of the theater?
Well, at WWE, when I first got there,
yeah,
I would know basically who the winner was going to be and all that kind of stuff, right? Then I stopped asking them. I told them, don't tell me. Don't tell me anything. Don't tell me who's going to win. The only thing that you need to tell me is if I need to get out of the way and it's going to be something massive, massive. Other than that, let me just react naturally. And I think it was more fun for me because I didn't know when I was literally watching it. I was watching like a fight, like a real fight, you know, or a real match. And so that's something that I stepped more into what the audience knows and feels. And I'm glad I did that because when you hear me say at WWE, here's your winner. Like I literally didn't know he was going to win. I was like, oh my God, here's your winner. You know, so it's more real.
One thing I want to ask you about is, of course, Laura Sanko, a good friend of mine in the UFC. When she started out, we would talk and she would like email me and we were really, really close. And one of her things was, there aren't a lot of women in this business and it's hard and it's difficult. And I want to be one of them. And now she's doing great things with the UFC. You're doing great things with the PFL. And so many female fans are watching you and going, man, maybe I could do that. Maybe there's space for me in that space. What does that mean to you to be at the forefront of that?
Seriously, my eyes water. Just to think that I'm the first and only like in cage female ring announcer is crazy to me. But I do owe it to WWE for giving me the opportunity, for hiring someone that knew nothing about ring announcing. And I didn't find out till 3:30, my very first day on the job, that was going to take over Howard Finkel and announce Monday Night Raw. I mean, that's how at that time it was definitely sink or swim. And I just really appreciate the PFL taking a chance on me in MMA. I appreciate the fans of MMA that have embraced me the way they have, but it really wouldn't be if the PFL wouldn't have sat with me and been like, okay, so this is how this is done over here. I don't think that I'd be here. And so I just really appreciate it. And I do want to let other women know that they can do this and they can find a space. The most important thing is love the sport, respect the company, respect the sport, respect your coworkers, show up, be dependable, work hard. Like, these things are expected, especially because you're a female in a male dominated industry. It's very easy to just be like, oh, she messed up. We got it. You know, she's got to go. So it's almost like you got to work a little harder, but that's okay. I mean, that's what opens doors and breaks barriers. And I'm just really grateful that I can do that.
Well, Lillian, get back to your prep, get back to your work, get back to interviewing all the fun, all the stuff that I know you have to do this week, rather than eat turkey like the rest of us are going to do. Have a great time in New York and really enjoy the pay-per-view.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you and everyone on the show. Appreciate it.
Well, Lillian Garcia, PFL announcer, going to be doing great work on the 25th. Don't miss it.
Busted Open is your daily home for all things pro wrestling. Join Dave LaGreca, WWE Hall of Famers Bully Ray and Mark Henry, and hardcore wrestling legend Tommy Dreamer.
Dave LaGreca here. From WWE to AEW, Impact, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and more, we talk it all. Whether you grew up watching Ric Flair or Stone Cold Steve Austin, Busted Open is your place for pro wrestling.
Busted Open, Mondays through Saturdays at 9 a.m. East on Fight Nation, Sirius XM Channel 156.
That's right. I'm joined right now by Vanessa Demopoulos. That is how you end a fight for sure. That is how you call it. By the way, where is your family from in Greece? Do you know?
We are from Nafpaktos, so it's like closer to the bottom of the peninsula, kind of near the islands. So it's sick.
My family's from Nafplio, from a little village up near Nafplio, by the way. Like, you go to Nafplio, and then you go up in the hills, and that's where my family's from. Yeah. So
we're also from Catahuara.
Okay, cool. I have family in Athens. I have family all over Sparta. They're everywhere. So yeah, a bunch of yeah. It's my Greek sucks. I can say hello, good morning, good afternoon, and I can cuss, and that's it. Literally, that's the end of my Greek. Very tough language. Anyway,
the cuss words. That's all that matters.
Right, exactly. So I can yell Malaga at Malaga at people who are cutting me off in traffic. So. Here's the deal, right? You said, as we were coming on air here, how excited you are, how you're living your best life, how everything's going great right now. Is there a difference between what you're doing now and what you did during the ups and downs before you got your first UFC win? What is it now that you're now on a 3-fight streak? Everything seems to be going your way momentum-wise. What changed?
Moving to Phoenix, Arizona, I feel like changed. I quit dancing. So I no longer like live in like 7 different lives. Like, I'm completely niched into being a fighter. I get to study fighting all day long. I get to be passionate about the thing I love the most, and I get to focus. And I think that that's just helped me so tremendously.
Now, is that the I was a substitute teacher while fighting. So I understand having to work the day job. Is it liberating or is it scary going, okay, I'm all in. If I fail at this, there's no net underneath me and going full time, or is it like, finally I can go full time? Which side was stronger for you?
It's both. But I was definitely more like liberated. Like, I knew that it was scary. I knew I wasn't ready, but it's like, when are you ready? Like, when is the right time? Like, when is enough enough? So you just really got to draw that line in the sand and say, fuck it, I'm doing this, and just go full force with it. Cause that's the only way you're going to accomplish anything, really. Everything you do in life is scary. Are you going to do it or are you not going to do it?
So talk about that, going back to, I'm speaking, of course, to Vanessa Demopoulos, of course, 3 fights in a row she has won. And last Saturday, UFC Fight Night 215, the Zijuku versus Kutalaba card, she beat Maria Oliveira in that fight. Go back to your UFC debut, JJ Aldrich, a very, very experienced fighter. You came up through Contender Series. You lost there, went back to LFA. You get your UFC shot. You come up short there. But a lot of fighters talk to me about that first UFC fight, kind of getting that off their back, whether it's a win or a loss. That idea of, I'm in here, I understand what's expected of me. Is that how it felt?
Honestly, the Contender fight felt like that. So when I was in the Contender fight, I was like, man, like, I got so much to prove. Like, oh my gosh, this is the UFC. I was so nervous, man. I was so nervous going into Contender. And then by the time I finally got to UFC, even though I went up a weight class, it was a 1-week notice against a veteran, I couldn't feel more at home. I was like, I finally arrived. I have arrived. This is where I belong. Now I get to show the world. I am here. I am making my statement. I'm going to let you know I showed up. And even though I lost that fight, I felt like that was a major win for me because I did amazing against a veteran. I went the entire three rounds and I had a lot of great moments amongst that fight. So I was really proud of it. And now that I'm in my own weight class, I'm undefeated in the UFC in my weight class. So that's a really good feeling.
What's it like? Because people don't understand when the opportunity comes, it can be like, hey, it's not your weight class. You don't have the notice. In the end of the day, it says W or it says L, but you might take that WL without everything you need to succeed. What's your thought process when your coach says they got to fight for you, but it's short notice and it's not in your weight class? Is there any thought of weighing the pluses or minuses, or is it, hey, it's a fight, I'm going? What's your thought?
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been ultra aggressive. So like for me, I was like, fuck, I got to fight. Let's do this. And I think that, you know, maybe it wasn't the smartest call, and that's fine because it is what it is. Like it already happened. But moving forward, I think that's another thing that has really changed a lot. I used to just trust myself and trust my gut and just believe in me. And I still do. But now I actually take into consideration what my coaches tell me. I take into consideration what my managers tell me. I listen to game plans. I listen to other people's opinions who are in my life. Because I think about it like, if you're in my life, I should trust you enough to have the right advice for me. Because I'm just an aggressive little monster. All I want to do is get in there and fight. And I have to accept the guidance from other people if I actually want to go farther than I've already gotten.
What is that step like? Because so much of the success in MMA is there used to be, I'm dating myself here, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, there were teams that could get you to a certain level. They could make you a local fighter, right? You'd do okay to a certain point. And then there were those teams that could get you all the way to the UFC. Those smaller teams have kind of disappeared. Like, you know, the ecosystem that allowed smaller teams to survive has kind of disappeared. It's kind of like big team or nobody, right? You got to be affiliated with a big team in order to make it, to get the sparring partners and all that stuff. What kind of step was that, training full-time and training with the right coaches, the right sparring partners that push you where you might not be the big fish? What was that like?
It was difficult. Again, it was another hard decision. And I think that where I am today is just like a collection of like really hard stuff that I've done that seems so minor in the large scheme of things, but it's like things like loyalty, things like caring about the people around me, things like your team is your family. And knowing that like I've had to move, I've moved twice. I started off in Ohio, then I moved to LA. I was in LA for 3 years. And then I had to move from LA and come over to Phoenix, Arizona. And it's like, those are not easy decisions to make, but they were the right decisions to make. And I think that when you have those discussions with people, the most important thing to me is, what are your intentions for my life? Because if you want to be so selfish enough to not see that there's something greater out there for me, are you really the right person in my life? And if you see that, you know what, I do love you, I care about you, and I want to see the best for you, and I'm sorry that it's not me at this time, then I can still continue to have you in my life moving forward, but our relationship's just going to look different, you know? And I think that it's that, you know, it's like loving where you're at, but seeing that you do have to move.
Speaking, of course, to Vanessa Demopoulos, victorious last Saturday, 3 in a row in the UFC. How has this streak felt? You talked about Dana White's Contender Series being, I've arrived, I'm here. So by the time you debuted in the UFC against J.J. Aldrich, you felt comfortable. This streak right now, is it a second level of comfort, or is it, I'm still trying to show what I can do? What are your thoughts on this streak of three that you're on now?
This right now is me being coachable. This is me trusting my team. Santino DeFranco is my head coach, and I just trust that man with my whole life because I know that, you know, he sees things that I'm not seeing, you know, like he knows more than I know, and I need to trust that knowledge. And that's how I've gotten where I'm at right now with my three fight win streak in the UFC. And that's how I'm going to continue to rise, you know, and just have faith in the people that are around me and knowing my own skills and growing and staying humble enough to be like, man, I don't know shit. I got so much I got to do still. And that's so hard to say when you're winning, you know, but it's also so freaking true, man. This sport is evolving every single day. And you got to stay on top of it. You got to keep learning. You got to keep growing. And you can't do that if you think you know it all. So I just pretend like I don't know shit. And then I just keep learning.
That sounds pretty good. Now, is being coachable to you a decision? Because so much of MMA is like a selfishness, right? You got to think it's me all the time. It's my development. It's my nutrition. It's my strength training. Everything's about me. But you have to, as you said, be coachable. Is it a decision to be coachable? Is it I've trained my mind. I've made a conscious choice to put myself in somebody else's hands.
Woo! That's so hard to do because, you know, like you get so far doing what you're already doing before somebody finally sees the potential in you. So it's like you are selfish at first, then you get to a certain point and it's not. Yeah, it's a decision. Like you have to tell yourself, like, I'm going to listen to this person. I'm going to trust this person. I believe this person has my best intentions at heart. And that comes down to family, you know, like we are literally putting our lives in our coach's hands. Think about that. We are walking into the cage with another human who's trying to cause bodily harm to us. And we got to trust another person who's not sitting in there with us that they have the answers for us. Like, that's crazy. It's wild. And it's a decision that you have to soundly make and follow through with and practice. You have to practice that choice. You can't just wake up one day and be coachable. You know, like, there's a lot of resistance along the way to you finally figuring it out.
I love, by the way, your enthusiasm about everything you are saying. When did MMA bring this out in you? Have you always been like this? When did you realize that MMA was the path you wanted to take? When you wanted to put this energy that I feel leaping out of my headset, when did you want to put that energy into mixed martial arts?
Man, I started training when I was 21, and I've always just been like the most intense person ever. And I look at
feeling.
It from like, a positive standpoint or like a negative standpoint when it comes to fighting. You know, it's like, I have intensity. I choose to be positive. But as soon as I step in that cage and those doors lock, you're in there with all of that intensity coming at you. And it is a lot. So it's always been a lot for me to try to manage. And I think that fighting really found me in a beautiful place because I get to go to the gym every day and get all this energy out. And I get to express myself and have freedom and be fun and be wild and crazy. I'm in an adult playground every day. They put me in a fucking padded room and tell me to go wild. Like, are you kidding me? This is the best job in the world.
So when you look at it that way, was it the difficulty of being coaches, like tempering that enthusiasm, stay behind your jab, keep your right hand up, get your footwork ready, don't just go in there throwing punches. Was about tempering some of that intensity without taking it out of you?
Yeah, dude, pray for my coaches, man. They still go through that shit with me. I'm still wild, I'm still crazy. And yeah, that has definitely been a struggle that we all have with how much energy I do bring, where it's like, hey, settle down, focus, you know, like pay attention. Do this and do it 100 times. And yes, it's really freaking boring, but we are still going to do exactly this. And you're going to do it right the first time. You're going to do it right the 100th time. And that's a struggle, man. But I think that, you know, whether you have a lot of energy or not, doing boring stuff is really hard to do for anybody. You know, nobody wants to do the same thing over and over and over again. And that's the only secret to success. Like, there's no shortcuts. There's no like secret recipe. It's do boring shit and do it a lot, and then do boring shit until you're good at it, and then you can be exciting.
Speaking to Vanessa Demopoulos, of course, 3-0 in her last three fights at 115 in the UFC. Let's talk about the division a little bit. Of course, Weili Zhang, a winner over Carla Esparza, but it's the one belt in women's MMA that has been, I don't know about a revolving door, but there hasn't been like one dominant champion. It changes hands a lot. There's a lot of turnover. Is it an exciting division to be in as a competitor?
It's one of the most exciting divisions to be in because, like you said, you know, like there is so much like leeway right there. I actually just saw Weili in the cafeteria. I'm here at the UFC Performance Institute right now, and that's really cool. I used to train with Weili. I also used to train with Carla Esparza. I have trained with Mackenzie Dern. So it's like, I've trained with a lot of these girls that are in the top five right now. And it's amazing for me. You know, I get to see, number one, the level that's there firsthand up close in person. And number two, just knowing that the division has like so much room for growth. It's just freaking awesome. It's really exciting. And yeah, I love where I am. It's a good place.
Once again, on this three fight streak, finally in your natural weight class, do you start thinking about, as you said, I want to be in pay-per-views, I want to be on the main card, I want to start headlining. You start thinking about that next step in your career, and how do you see it unfolding?
Man, what are the rankings coming out? You know, like, who knows? I might potentially be ranked right now. I don't know who mans all that. I don't know when they happen, but that's exciting to think about. It's exciting to think about that, like, I might be on pay-per-views coming up. I might be on main cards coming up. Like, it's just really cool, you know, and I feel like I'm driving forward right now. I'm going to be loud about it because that's exactly what I want, you know. Like, I'm making my dreams come true every single day that I get to walk into the gym and have fun. And it's really amazing for me. I'm also doing commentating right now. I'm also doing fight analysis stuff. I do pre and post shows for UFC. So the pay-per-view cards, like, it's a lot that's going on. There's so much excitement. There's so much momentum happening right now in and out of the octagon being locked. I couldn't be happier, bro. You know, like, this is good, man. Dreams come true if you work for them. That's where I get to sit.
The size of the fight, meaning, you know, last Saturday, you know, it can be at the Apex, it can be with a live crowd, it can be at, you know, Madison Square Garden. Does the size of the fight mean something to you, or is it tunnel vision when you're walking out there and actually in the octagon?
Nothing matters when you're getting ready to fight. I don't know how everybody else feels, but for me, I don't care. It could be literally nobody in the, like, it could be nobody in the arena whatsoever, just you and me locked in a cage. That's the only thing that I'm focused on right there in that moment, is the person that's in front of me trying to cause harm to who I am. It's just not like, I gotta fight. That's it. Like, that is a serious, serious business right there. If you're thinking about anything else, you're in the wrong sport. You're in the wrong cage, because you're in there with me and I'm only focused on hurting you right now. Like, that's it. I don't care about who's in the arena. I don't care if my family's there. I don't care if anybody is there. I'll fight absolutely alone. As long as my coaches are there with me, I am beating up anybody who's in front of me.
So you'll fight in the shade is what you're saying?
I'll fight in the shade. But put me under the lights, baby, because that's where I belong.
A big Efkata Stoll from everybody here at Unlocking the Cage. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. That's right. She's Greek, and she's fighting, and she's winning. That's right. Vanessa Demopoulos, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being awesome, guys. We'll see you next time.
Hi, everyone. This is Heisman Trophy winner and NFL quarterback Doug Flutie. I'm excited to tell you that my podcast, the Flutie Flakes Cast, is back for the entire football season. I may have played like 21 years of professional football in three different leagues, but I'm still just a big kid, and I absolutely love this game. Every week, we'll talk about the topics I care about and bring on super fun guests. So please subscribe today, wherever you stream your podcast or listen on the SXM app. Include it with most subscriptions.
It looks like AKA doing great things right now in MMA. Of course, you're not paying attention. Islam Makhachev, UFC champion at 155 pounds. Then Usman Nurmagomedov last weekend against Patricky Pitbull pitched an absolute shutout. Another champ for AKA. I'm now joined by head coach over at American Kickboxing Academy, Javier Mendez. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, Jimmy. Nice talking to you again, buddy.
Always great talking to you. Always great. So when you look at right now the landscape of MMA, what is it right now separating what Usman Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev, what they're doing, your Dagestani fighters, right? What are they doing that puts them a level above everybody else in an era where training is so universal? So many teams know what they're doing. What are these guys doing that puts them a level ahead?
I think the fact that they've been practicing together for so many years, you know, 15, 20 years, some of these guys, and the bond and the growth they have training with each other, you know, the advanced techniques they're getting from different coaches. I think it's that iron sharpens iron type thing. So when you have a Khabib as your go-to guy to be like, you know, you have a heck of a, you know, someone to look at to mold yourself after. And so it was actually helping you achieve that. And that's what Habib's doing. You know, he's the prototype, and these guys are emulating what he did, plus adding what Habib wasn't adding as much of. Habib was adding the striking also, but not as much as these guys are. Habib was slow to training with the striking because Reason being is Habib didn't really train with anybody but me, and I didn't see him, but, you know, only during fight camp. So it was difficult for him to jump in the striking areas where these guys here, his teammates and his brothers, they're all training year-round in stand-up. So that's the difference. It's the year-round training, and, you know, the secret weapon for them is Habib.
Explain, if you will, if you can. I grew up my first 9 years in the San Joaquin Valley. As you know, that's the big flat area between San Jose and L.A., right? And some great wrestling teams out there. High school, right? You got Buchanan. You have Clovis West. You have Bakersfield. These incredible high school teams. And I was talking to somebody who grew up there where I grew up, and they said everybody wrestles. It's just part of the culture in the San Joaquin Valley. Everybody wrestles. It's the sport that everybody takes part in. In Dagestan, it's kind of the same thing. We've talked to somebody from Iran. It's like, you know, everybody wrestles. It's just part of the culture. To where even if they're not standout wrestlers, they're not national champions, they've still been doing it since they were little kids. Is that across the board as you're finding as a coach in Eastern Russia, in Dagestan? Is it everybody?
It's in Dagestan for sure, because I can't say about the other regions of Russia, but in Dagestan, I can honestly say 100%, because that's what they do over there. That's their thing. You know, they love grappling. They love wrestling. You know, they love stand-up. I mean, they do it all. Listen, I went the first time I was there in 2018 or 19, late 19 or 18, I was there, my first visit. And I went with Islam Makhachev to like a picnic, right? And in the picnic, you had these stud Olympic level wrestlers, right? And their kids, and they're out there having their fun, you know, cooking and whatnot. And the kids are out wrestling with each other. You know, they're all wrestling, they're submission wrestling, and they're all competing with each other. That was just the norm, you know. And when you're there, you see it. It's what they do all the time, and that's why. When I came back, I would say, you guys, you haven't seen nothing yet. There's so many champions that are going to be coming out of Abdumanov's gym, because I see what they're doing, you know, and how advanced they are compared to everybody else. And when you got, you know, 50, 60 kids, and they're all hungry and eager, and they have someone like the ego to look up to be someone that they can be and who's leading them, you know, it's kind of hard not to follow in those footsteps.
Of course, speaking to Javier Mendez, head coach at American Kickboxing Academy up in San Jose. We were doing a little talking on this show about MMA teams and kind of who's hot right now and who's big. And it's, you know, City Kickboxing's doing great. You're doing great. And we talked about the things that break gyms up, right? The things that, you know, some other teams that I, in the beginning, knew, you know, Lion's Den was great. Pat Miletich's team was great. And they end up breaking up or splitting up, or things end up fracturing teams. In your experience, what is it that makes big teams, great teams, kind of fall apart after a while? What do you have to avoid as a coach to keep that from happening to you and your gym? What is it?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's that family unity. And look, trust me, we have our problems too. We have our problems, yeah. But I've been fortunate and lucky enough to be able to stop a lot of things from happening. And we've had a lot of things happen to us, too. Don't get me wrong. And the reason why we stay strong is because one thing I've always done is I stayed true and I stay loyal to the fighters and what they need for a fight. I never put them in harm's way. You know, at least I didn't do it on purpose. I might have done it by accident from here to there, because we're all susceptible to screwing up here and there. And I've done my share also. But the most important thing is we keep each other together, because we do talk about it. We do talk about the things. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying like every little situation we're going to talk about it. Sometimes it's just, there's no talking ifs and buts about it. You have a flare up. So that's one. And the other is just plain flat luck. Just luck.
Is it a matter partly in the time you've been in the game? I remember you coaching, you know, Frank Shamrock back in the late 90s. Is so much of it managing the egos and dealing with the personalities in a team as much as it is imparting technique to somebody?
Yeah, it's more managing the ego. Forget the technique part. It's more about ego. It's more about mental. It's more mental than anything. I've been fortunate to be involved with great athletes, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to instill the mental aspect to them, and not the physical as much, more as the mental. I'm not a great striking coach. I'm not this. What I am really good at is game plans, and I'm really good at mental. I have become very good at in that department, in that area of expertise. I'm good at that part. Not the coaching part. Like, you know, hey, I show you how to throw a right cross. I show you how to, nah, there's coaches out there that blow doors on me. It's more the mental part that I focus on. And you know, and being truthful with the fighters, let them know what is real, what is not. You know, I don't bullshit them. They know what, when I tell them something, I'm being honest with them, and they know my intentions are to help them, not to beat them down. It's to build them up.
In that same vein, Eugene Behrman came out and said that he agrees with the stoppage, that Mark Goddard stopping the Israel Adesanya fight with Alex Pereira. There was a little bit of controversy there. I thought, for example, it could have gone on maybe another 10 seconds or so. But Eugene Behrman came out and said, hey, I thought it was a good stoppage. I appreciate him not getting hurt. I thought Mark Goddard did the right thing. Is it important to you as a coach to be that outside observer who tells a fighter what they don't want to hear, maybe? That, you know what? If a fighter comes out and says, hey, I was winning that fight, and you go, no, you weren't. You were losing, or whatever the deal was. Do you feel it's necessary to be that kind of voice of reason outside the octagon?
Yes, you need to be that voice of reasoning. And also, you know, Eugene, that's his perspective on stopping the fight. But also what people forget is we can't just throw in the towel. We have to look at the doctor. The doctor has to throw in the towel, et cetera, et cetera. That's so difficult to do. They need to change that stupid rule. Mm. It needs to be boxing. If you get up on the cage, the fight stops. You know, this way the fighter has the coach is looking at him at all times, and the coach knows when to step in. Versus, we got to look at the doctor. What's the doctor doing while you're trying to get the doctor's attention? How much action are you missing in between there? You know. So, I mean, I understand Eugene's point, but at the same time, too, there needs to be a better situation where a corner should be able to, you know, finish the fight for the fighter, even when the fighter himself doesn't want. You know, we've seen that many a times in boxing. And, you know, Jimmy, you've seen many of boxing matches, and you've seen the corner always save the fighter. And I think it'll be the same for us. We're no different than boxing coaches. The only difference is we're a little bit handcuffed when it comes to stopping the fight, you know. And I wish that law would just change, and we can just flat out go out and do it. But we can't. So in reference to what you're saying with Eugene, you know, I don't know. I was okay with the stoppage, but I was okay if we would have let him go a little bit longer. But at the same time, too, I think Mark Goddard did a right call. Where I'll give you an example where I think maybe that was the wrong call is Andre Filao. I just saw his fight. I just saw the end. Yep. And I saw him get hit with a spinning wheel kick. And then he put his hands up. And then the fighter hit him with the 1-2. And he was perfectly in the fight. And then the ref stopped it. But as soon as the ref stopped it, he was like, hey, what the heck's going on? That right there was a premature stoppage, 100%. Because if a fighter's hurt, there's no way you can respond that quick to say, hey, I'm in the fight. What are you doing? You know, unfortunately, we're at the hands and the mercy of the refs. And sometimes refs are human and they screw up. Like, I'll give you, for instance, when DC... He was fighting John Jones the second fight around, and John McCarthy, who was a great ref, the greatest, if not the greatest, one of them, he let that fight go on too long. And after the fight was over, we couldn't do nothing. We were like, like I said, the same thing. Cain Velasquez got so upset, he had some big words with John in the back room. You know, and I'm telling him, I said, Cain, what was that? He goes, oh, it's bullshit. You should have stopped it. You know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Cain was about really to beat him up. You know, really, that's how mad Cain was. You know, so situations like that, you know, you want to try to avoid. But, man, it's a tough job being a referee. You know, it's a tough, tough job. I did one time in my gym here where I was playing the referee. Shit, that ain't easy. That ain't easy. You got so many things going on, you know. Can you imagine a real fight? Forget about it.
Dude, I had Big John on, and he mentioned that. He said, yeah, Cain went after me after the DC stoppage. He thought I let it go on too far. He mentioned that exact scenario you're talking about. He told me about that. Like last week, yeah. I was talking about it. So he brought it up. That's how mad Cain was. How important is it to you and your gym, for the longevity of your gym, that guys like DC and Cain and Luke Rockhold and Khabib stick around the gym to work with that next generation. How important is that for continuity to you?
It is so crucial for it to continue, but unfortunately, I only got Habib. But yeah. Habib's not here half the time. Over Habib's only going to be about 10% of the time, you know, unfortunately, for me, you know, but it's crucial. And Kane, of course, the situation prevented him. I had Kane here almost 100% of the time, and I was so happy to have that world-class experience and that great of a coach that he is, to be here guiding my guys. And the energy these guys got, the wisdom they got from Kane was unbelievable. So, no, it's extremely important. Luke Rockhold is family, will be family forever. But Luke moved on years ago, bro. He hasn't never been part of AKA the team for the longest time. He will always be team AKA, but his presence has been gone since he went to Henry Hoops. He never been back. And that was, what, 6-7 years ago?
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the we had Anthony Smith after one of his fights, and we were talking, and he said he told his coaches, if you stop the fight, I'm not working with you anymore. What do you think about fighters who say, and I've heard this multiple times, yeah, my guys aren't allowed to stop the fight. And I was like, well, then they're not doing their job. Like, what is your thought about that as a coach, like this agreement ahead of time?
If a fighter told me that, if you stop the fight, you're not my coach, then I said, then I'm not your coach. Go find someone else. So you're telling me I don't care about you as your life. Fuck that. Goodbye. I'm not coaching you.
Yeah. Well, you're not allowed to do your job, and that's a huge part of it, yeah?
Yeah, let me tell you something, what DC's done, okay? DC knows full well that we would have done things had we known what's going on, so DC doesn't tell us. He doesn't say anything because he knew we would have stopped the fight. So he put it upon himself, like, for instance, with Josh Barnett. Right, he broke his hand in the second round with Josh Barnett in the Strikeforce, Grand Prix tournament they had. Right, broke his hand in the second round. Didn't tell his damn nothing about it. Josh Barnett goes on. He broke his hand. I don't know if it was the third or fourth round or maybe the fifth. I don't remember. But Josh Barnett broke his hand. His hand was obviously broken. And we go, damn, he broke his hand. And DC goes, yeah, I know, I broke mine too. He goes, what? When did you break your hand in the second round? I go, why did you tell us? Because I know you dudes were going to stop the fight, and you weren't going to stop the fight. So things like that, well, you got to deal with it, right? But had we known DC broke his hand, who knows what we would have done? You know, maybe we would have seen, you know, something we didn't like and we would have stopped it. I don't know. But I'm just saying sometimes the fighters put it upon themselves. But if he tells us, I don't care if I'm dying, you're not stopping the fight. No, I don't want that fighter with me. I don't want him with me. I do not want him with me. Do not. If you're that type of fighter and you think I'm going to be your coach, you got another thing coming, because I'm not in this for a blood sport, bro. This is, for me, it's not life or death. This is a competition, you know, and if it means your life or your children, you know, if you have children, don't get to see you as the best father you can be or the mother you can be, and I'm responsible and you're telling me don't be responsible? No, not going to happen. Not going to do it.
I have a big question. Of course, I'm talking to Javier Mendez, head coach at American Kickboxing Academy. One of my producers, KOB, he is Team Volk for life. He has incredible faith in Alexander Volkanovsky. You are, of course, the coach for Islam Makhachev. What are the dangers you see in Alexander Volkanovsky? A lot of people writing off Alexander Volkanovsky as an opponent for Islam Makhachev in Perth. What do you think the strengths are to a guy like Alexander Volkanovsky coming up from 45?
Well, the fact that he's pound for pound the champ, that means you have to respect him for how good he is. The point that we have to be aware of is how strong is he? You know, how strong can he deal with Islam's strength? Because I can tell you this, Islam Makhachev is so strong. He's unpredictably stronger than he looks, you know, and he looks strong. So you can imagine what the guys that have grappled with Islam are saying, like, wow, I didn't expect that. Just like Habib, you know, when people look at Habib, but then they grapple with Habib, and they're like in disbelief what they just experienced, you know. And Islam has the same thing. I don't know if Alex has enough, you know, submission knowledge, you know, or strength to keep Islam off of him. So his best bet is to keep it on the stand-up and look to outpoint Islam or KO him. And I have a hard time believing that anybody can do that to Islam within the featherweight and the lightweight division. I have a hard time believing anybody can do that. And honestly speaking, I have a hard time that anybody can do it in the welterweight division. Though the welterweight division, there is more viable options, that there is potential dangers there. But that's how good Islam Makhachev is. He's just so damn good that, you know, the guy can do everything. And I know I said it before and people were, you know, they were downing on me like this and that, but I'm only speaking the truth. Look at these stats. Look at how many times he's been hit. The guy's got great defense. He's got great offense. He's got great mental. He's a great student of the game. I've never had to talk to him one time about anything. He is perfect as they come when it comes to game planning, when it comes to doing what you're supposed to do. You know, he is perfect.
It's always a pleasure talking to you about the game, about your team, and about Islam Makhachev. Javier Mendez, coach at AKA, thanks once again for giving us your time, brother.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
MMA on SiriusXM is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Plus, catch Unlocking the Cage weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern and MMA Today Tuesday to Thursday from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, and on the SXM app.
SiriusXM Podcasts.